massacre of the Latins, conducted them by secure and easy journeys to Constantinople, and advised them to await the arrival of their brethren. For a while they remembered their faults and losses, but no sooner were they revived by the hospitable entertainment than their venom was again inflamed. They stung their benefactor, and neither gardens, nor palaces, nor churches were safe from their depredations. For his own safety, Alexius allured them to pass over to the Asiatic side of the Bosphorus. But their blind impetuosity soon urged them to desert the station which he had assigned, and to rush headlong against the Turks, who occupied the road of Jerusalem. The hermit, conscious of his shame, had withdrawn from the camp to Constantinople, and his lieutenant, Walter the Penniless, who was worthy of a better command, attempted without success to introduce some order and prudence among the herd of savages. They separated in quest of prey, and themselves fell an easy prey to the arts of the Sultan. By a rumour that their foremost companions were rioting in the spoils of his capital, Solyman tempted the main body to descend into the plain of Nicaea. They were overwhelmed by the Turkish arrows, and a pyramid of bones informed their companions of the place of their defeat. Of the first crusaders, 300,000 had already perished before a single city was rescued from the infidels, before their graver and more noble brethren had completed the preparations of their enterprise. None of the great sovereigns of Europe embarked their persons in the First Crusade. The Emperor Henry IV was not disposed to obey the summons of the Pope. Philip I of France was occupied by his pleasures, William Rufus of England by a recent conquest. The kings of Spain were engaged in a domestic war against the Moors, and the northern monarchs of Scotland, Denmark, Sweden, and Poland were yet strangers to the passions and interests of the South.
Beside this rabble of the First Crusade, some more patrician crusaders were led by Godfrey of Bouillon, who travelled through Europe and passed by Constantinople, where the Emperor Alexius was a cautious supporter of these Western strangers. The knights of this crusade amounted to some 100,000 on horseback, with perhaps another 500,000 foot soldiers. Gibbon tells us that, if the Latin authors are to be credited, then more than 6 million people migrated from Europe to Asia for this struggle, a figure that he sensibly disdains to accept. By 1099 AD, the crusaders arrived at Jerusalem, to which they laid siege. After 40 days, Godfrey and his fellow princelings stood victorious on the city's battlements, and watched as 70,000 Moslems were put to the sword. Godfrey was acclaimed king of Palestine, though his victory was short-lived. Jerusalem was to change hands many times more. Many more crusades were to follow in the 12th and 13th centuries, and an uneasy relationship developed between the Western princes who trekked to Asia to reclaim Jerusalem and the Byzantine emperors, Christians but of a different creed, at Constantinople. Religious strife between Constantinople, where one god was worshipped, and the Western Latin princedoms, where the Trinity was venerated, eventually resulted in open conflict within Constantinople itself. A fire broke out in the city, and the conflagration lasted 8 days and nights. In 1204 AD, Constantinople was taken by force by Boniface, Marquis of Montferrat, who led the Trinitarian Christian inhabitants of the city at that time, many of whom were but transient pilgrims en route to the Holy Lands.
Pope Innocent III accuses the pilgrims of respecting, in their lust, neither age, nor sex, nor religious profession, and bitterly laments that the deeds of darkness, fornication, adultery, and incest were perpetrated in open day, and that noble matrons and holy nuns were polluted by the grooms and peasants of the Catholic camp. It is indeed probable that the license of victory prompted and covered a multitude of sins, but it is certain that the capital of the East contained a stock of venal and willing beauty sufficient to satiate the desires of 20,000 pilgrims, and female prisoners were no longer subject to the right or abuse of domestic slavery. The Marquis of Montferrat was the patron of discipline and decency. The Count of Flanders was the mirror of chastity. They had forbidden, under pain of death, the rape of married women, or virgins, or nuns, and the proclamation was